greetings, fellow classic TV fans. Anson Williams is a multifaceted, legendary talent, most recognized for his portrayal of Patsy Weber on the beloved classic TV series Happy Days. This iconic show is about to celebrate its 50th anniversary, and Anson and I talk about all the wonderful aspects surrounding this masterpiece. We discuss Gary Marshall in detail and reveal a not very well-known tidbit about who the very first writers were. Anson attributes the show's success to the genius of Marshall, claiming that he not only made the show work, kept the cast humble, but was the catalyst for the lifelong friendships the surviving hyper-talented cast still enjoys. We also talk about the significant impact Anson's had as a director of various television productions, as well as stage shows like the highly acclaimed one he's involved with now. Crazy Mama stars General Hospital's Carolyn Hennessy, and just wait until you hear who the play was written by. We talk about his book, Singing to a Bulldog, from Happy Days to Hollywood Director and the unlikely mentor who got me there. You'll be greatly entertained as Anson rakes me over the coals for not actually having read it prior to the interview, but it's all in fun and you'll love it. We also talk about some of the worthy causes Anson supports, such as Doors of Change, which helps at-risk homeless youth to break free and become an integral part of society. This is definitely a compassionate guy, folks. So, enjoy! Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the podcast the legendary, multi-talented Anson Williams. Hey, Anson.
Hey, nice to be on.
Well, it's a pleasure having you, sir. I've been a fan since, well, that's the thing.
Is it BC or is it AD?
Well, it's funny because I was just, I was thinking about my parents this morning saying, enjoy it, kid. It goes fast. And I was always like, no, as a matter of fact, from where I'm at, it's not going fast enough, you know, hurry up now. I'm like, whoa. I'm like, no, and that's no pun intended, folks. It's not whoa, it's whoa.
There's the Fonzie whoa, and there's like the light whoa.
Yes, exactly. Oh, man, I can't believe it. It does not seem like 50 years to me.
Yes, can you believe that? Unbelievable. And you know what's really wonderful? We're all still great friends.
Yes.
And that's really rare in entertainment. But we have a constant open thread on texting. And every week we're 5 minutes away texting each other. Everybody's everywhere around the world, around the country. But everyone's 5 minutes away to just see how things are going, you know, keeping friendships up. Really special.
It really is. You know, I've been devouring autobiographies. My followers will tell you I'm just rabid over them. Matter of fact, Singing to a Bulldog is on my wish list, but
you have not read Singing to a Bulldog?
Uh-oh. Okay, that's it.
Well, this is a short interview. Thank you very much. It's like, yeah, I can see where I stand in your line of importance, but that's okay.
No, you don't understand.
I do not understand. No.
Yeah, exactly. Like, who do you think you are? You're going to read Ron's book instead of mine? And, oh, guilty as charged. I read The Boys.
Oh, excuse me. Ron did a book? Really? Oh, I had no idea.
I think it was more his brother.
Ron has a brother? I had no idea.
Yeah, he was...
Just kidding, folks.
I think he played second string on that softball team, or was he...
Oh, no, Clint? First string. Clint, great softball player.
Yes.
Great. And he was a catcher. And Ron was an incredible athlete, too. Is an incredible athlete. You know, and Henry was a great pitcher. All of us really were, you know, very, very good at softball. We were quite competitive.
Well, and you know, and it doesn't surprise me because, yes, I read Marion's book too. Oh, man, am I really.
Wait, she did a book?
Yeah, see?
Really? Discreeting, folks. Excuse me. I want to know one thing. I want to know two things. Did you read The Boys? Have you read The Boys?
I did.
You read The Boys. And did you read Marion's book?
Yes, My Life.
Good, I'm hanging up now.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's like...
I'm saying, really? That is, well, actually, it's pretty nervy. To interview a guy whose book you haven't read, but everyone you haven't interviewed, you read their book. That makes a lot of sense.
Isn't that...
I don't know. Are you going to talk about... I heard rumor handling the book.
Yeah, nope, I'm not touching that one. Nope.
Did you read it?
No, I did not.
Tell the truth.
I am being totally honest. Thank God.
Well, then I'm going to tell you about it. Is a great book. Everyone should get it. It is really, it's very inspiring and terrific. And it's on the New York Times bestselling list.
Well, you know what? None of this surprises me.
But if I would have help promoting mine, like from you, like who, that you'd actually care about me, you'd have read it and promoted it a little bit. But no, you don't read it. You let it sit there. You know, nice picture on the cover. And it's collecting dust. Thank you so much.
Well, just for that, now it's going to the top of my Christmas list, and I'll have it. I'll have it by that day, damn it. I promise.
Well, you know, talk is cheap. Talk is very, very cheap.
Somehow, somewhere, I'll be able to.
We need a picture of you reading it in your hand.
Absolutely. I'll forward that to Harlan, and he can put it out to all his people, too. And that way it's really confirmed.
Yes. Very important for my ego, which has gone away years ago.
Well, I mean, look, it's not that I don't know anything about you, because let's face it, you know, you're one of the great American classic television icons, and it's just true. I'm not trying to make up for my lack of research here.
You're doing a pretty good job. Keep
thank
going.
You, thank well. You. So in that case, it's been more than 50 years for you and Marion and Ron. So
yes,
this would be like 52.
I think 51. It's hard because a year before we had done the first Happy Days pilot. Yeah, a year before we did the first pilot. So it might be. Gosh, it could be 51 years. It could be 52. I don't know, or it could be 51 and a half. I don't know. But, you know, but yeah, Ron, there was an original Happy Days pilot. But the Fonzie character wasn't created. Ralphie character wasn't created. There was a different Joni. There was a different father. Ron was in it. I was in it. Marion was in it. And it didn't sell. It was very good. But it's a much softer show than the Happy Days that went on the air. It was more like Summer 42. Just much more of a softer kind of 50s show. And it didn't sell. And then a year later, American Graffiti came out, and Grease was a hit on Broadway. And the 50s became kind of big again. And ABC thought, wow, we should do another Happy Days pilot. But this time, they edged it up a bit to be more like American Graffiti. And guess who wrote the pilot? Gary Marshall wrote the first pilot. Bill Miskin and Rob Reiner wrote the second pilot of Happy Days.
Wow.
A lot of people don't know that. And that one sold. And that one had the character of Fonzie in it, which was, thank goodness, because that bought me a house. And then Donnie Most actually, backtracking, Ron and I actually had an audition again for the second pilot. They thought we might be too old. So, and we had a screen test and all this. And Don Most auditioned for Potsy. And thank goodness, I got the part again. Ron got the part again. But they loved Don so much, who today is my best friend, they created Ralph for him. They created the character for him.
Yeah.
And the second pilot went on. And there we are. We're talking today. 50 years later.
That's amazing. And I mean, talk about... As if this happens every day, a perfectly cast show.
Yes. Yes. Magical.
No weak element whatsoever. And I got to say, you know, we all have our favorite characters. You were definitely one of mine. As a matter of fact, I would say you were my favorite character.
Wait. I'm the character whose book you didn't read? Sure. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So that's me trying to make up for not reading the Bulldog book yet. And I'm telling you, by the end of this conversation, I will be redeemed.
We'll see.
I'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah, I know. The proof's in the pudding.
You bet. Yep.
But it's true. I mean, Potsy really just, you were kind of the catalyst that just made all the other characters, the main characters, really work. I mean, as a director, you'd probably have another more sophisticated term for that, but that's how I felt about it. You know, you were...
Well, no, it's very good writing. It's very good, you know, I mean, Gary Marshall and the team, you know, really created dynamics between the characters that just worked. You know, just a perfectly organized match of friendship. And all of us playing our parts as best we could. It became a huge part of the show. There's a magic and perfect chemistry and collaboration that just goes above the page. It's just divine intervention, you know, to a show. And that's what happened here. It just was just the perfect group at the perfect time. You know, with some of the greatest creators in the world, you know, writing and directing and all that. So we were just very lucky to be part of that. And together, it became bigger than the whole. And it created a spark of magic. And thank goodness it's on celluloid, and it can play for every generation to come.
Right. Right. That's a biggie. For sure. Like I said, for me, it was... Are you kidding me? That seemed like just yesterday. I mean,
yeah.
50 years? What?
Yeah.
Let's see, that makes me about, oh no. I'm like, okay, my parents were right.
You're older than four. I'll tell you that.
I'll tell you, Anson, my parents were right. They were like, enjoy it, kid. But.
Yeah, and I'm actually to the point now. Don't blink, a decade will pass.
Right. Yeah, well, it's weeks like that for me now, because I'm like, didn't I take the garbage out just yesterday?
No, don't even go there. Don't even go there. Are you at the point in life where you walk into a room and you don't know why you walked in? It's like you walked in to do something and you forgot what you had to do.
Well, back in my pot smoking days, that was really a common
No, forget pot smoking days. I'm talking today. Even that, where you just go in, or you put your phone down, and you walk, and you're going around. Where's my phone? It didn't register. You just put it down, like 10 feet away, right? Yeah.
You know, and it's funny. Also, I noticed the pressure change. In other words, you're going from upstairs to downstairs, and because the gravitational forces are different, you forgot what the hell you were doing.
Oh, that's your excuse? That's
and,
a good
oh,
one.
Oh, right. Did I put that joint out or did I leave it going? I hope not.
Okay, yeah, really, yeah. No, I think now you, no, I think you need a joint wall to help remember.
Well, it sometimes has that effect. Oh, no, everybody's like, Pat, you debaucherous rock musician, you. And it's like, well, there's my excuse.
There you go.
I was around in the 80s, you know.
The problem is, are you still rocking? You know, as long as you're still rocking, it's okay.
Yes, I've had some issues with my ears, but that also comes with the territory of playing loud rock and roll for years. And
Oh, yeah, man.
Headphones, specifically. I really am an advocate against headphones. They're useful, you know, for isolation and all of that. But boy, are they bad for your ears. Oh, man.
Yes. I keep saying there are a lot of bad things for your ears and whatever. And I'm very thankful for, like, waking up in the morning after with vision.
Yes. Well, you know, speaking of vision, oh, you love how I tie this together.
That's a good one. That's really good. It's a good way to, you know.
Thank you.
Yes.
Your vision was not only as a talent in front of the camera, but behind the camera. And that's pretty common knowledge that you've done a lot of work as a director, worked on some major shows. And, you know, of course, if I had read the book, I would be able to tell you exactly. Matter of fact, I wouldn't even need this interview. I could just tell you the whole story from beginning to end. But fortunately, we have Mr. Williams on the phone with us. My question is, when did you get that feeling of, I'm very interested in what's going on behind the camera? It's very clear when Mr. Howard had that.
Right.
But at what point Was that something that you went, you know what, I could do that?
Well, it's interesting. Well, people, I don't think people realize the influence Gary Marshall had on all of us.
Oh, yeah.
He really sat us down and inspired us to stop with egos, use Paramount Studios as a college. I said, you should learn a lot of different, you should wear a lot of different hats to survive in entertainment business. It might not be actors all your lives. You should learn directing, writing, whatever. He said, I'll open up this, your campus is Paramount Studios. And it's anything you want to learn is here for you. So early on, I was able to shadow Lola Polansky shooting Chinatown in the back lot. I was able to shadow John Schlesinger doing Day of the Locust. I was able to watch all the Grease numbers being, all the dance numbers being filmed. Every day, anytime I wasn't working, I was able to shadow a director, and that was my film school. But I started it writing. I have written a story called Skyward, and Ron Howard said, I love this. So we both exec produced it. He directed it. It starred Betty Davis. It was a very social conscious piece. First time a paraplegic actor started a movie. It was a big deal. So I became a producer writer, and I would sell shows during Happy Days. And then after Happy Days, right at the end, I was very frustrated because producing is great and writing and all that, but I love being on the set, and I love when I would shadow directors, just seeing if that would be something I'd love to do. And I did. So I had projects in development, and I was able to attach myself to an after-school special called No Greater Gift. And it actually doubled donor cards in the United States. And also, I won the Humanist Award writing and all that. So basically, I got to hire myself for a couple of shows. And then I started getting hired myself directorially. But I loved it because I loved being on the set. I loved being with actors. I loved being a storyteller. Just loved the whole process. And if it wasn't for Gary Marshall opening up the opportunity on the Paramount lot for me to observe, you know, I wouldn't have had a chance. Also, Ron, watching you, Ron and I did a few projects early on, like Skyward, and just watching the brilliance of Ron, that was an inspiration. So I just had incredible mentors. Yeah, I just was very fortunate in being inspired by Gary Marshall to use the Paramount lot as a college, use it, you know, as a platform to learn so many other crafts and entertainment. And all of us took that to heart. And I think that's why all of us are still involved. We're still productive because, you know, Gary always said, you guys are going to be famous and a light's going to be on you. And you guys don't really deserve it. You know, you guys don't really, no, you really don't. It's on you because they see on TV. But take that light and shine it on people that do deserve it, that really have something terrific to offer. Give them that platform. Give them that light to help society, to help people. And we've done that since day one. I mean, Gary made sure we didn't have ego overtaking what's important.
Right.
Ego overtaking the purpose of storytelling. Ego overtaking, you know, the reason for your talent. So anyway, I owe so much to Gary. And Ron, early on, was the greatest reader because he was well-known and all that. And his work ethic and his heart were just wonderful. And Henry Winkler became the number one star in the world during the process of the show. And yet he never let it overcome the tacked-on relationship of the cast. He never ever thought he was better than anyone. He made sure we were always friends, always together, and always a team. So this, and Gary Marshall, and all our writers, I mean, he just made a very collaborative, true team of love and respect and great storytelling and great comedy.
Yeah.
And that's what Happy Days is so special to me.
Yeah.
And again, going to 50 years here, there's a big reason why we're still friends and have opened texting 50 years later. That is brotherhood. And And all that was really inspired by Gary and then Ron and then the rest of us, you know, falling in line with the greater good.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things that my research is up on, and that is that everyone was just, present company included, just wonderful, warm, down-to-earth people that didn't let it. I mean, again, I get, probably because Gary's saying, you don't deserve it. I don't know if that would have a part of that aspect where you got the spotlight, obviously. And to not let that affect you is a Herculean task.
No one died from a drug overdose.
Right.
I mean, it's like really grounding us in a very vulnerable level. I mean, people today, I was directing shows. I did 5 years on Seek a Life, American Teenager, directing, and great cast. And there were a couple of them were going, oh, we're so popular. And I think a couple of million viewers, right? It's so popular. I go, you're not that popular, right? I said, when we get happy, it's about 58 million average audience, 58 million per week, let alone the syndication during the day. And no one got big for their britches. So guys, don't you get big for I tried to inspire them the way Gary inspired me to use their 2 million viewer fame for the greater good for their lives, and that felt good. So it's very interesting what people think is popular these days. You know, we understand. Believe it was like the Beatles, the Stones. I mean, it was crazy.
Oh yeah.
But Gary made sure, and honestly, Ron and I were a huge part of this. He was always so grounded, and he was a star before he was on the show.
Yeah.
And I just became literally like deep friendships on the set. It wasn't like work.
Yeah.
It was just like great friends and we're doing something together. But the greatest memories, honestly, were from our softball team.
Yeah.
Gary was a sports nut but also wanted to put together a softball team because he felt that you'll always have the back of your team member. And he thought that would come back to the set. That friendship and backing up for somebody will be more important than ego, And he was right. And we put together a softball team, and we were all ex-athletes, all really good. And we did USO tours all over the world. We were very competitive. We won most of the time. We played every major state in the United States as a pregame against other, football teams or whatever they want to put up against us. But those trips, playing softball over the China Sea in Japan, 3rd Infantry Division in Germany, the Mediterranean, we had all these amazing experiences that were out of the box as actors, together as teammates. It really was brought to the set.
Yeah.
And we really did protected each other's backs.
Yeah.
And I think that's another huge reason for lifelong friendships here.
Sure. Well, and you echo Ron and Marion because they both talk about it with the same enthusiasm and love for that era. I mean, it's like, the hell with the show, man. We were a badass softball team.
Yes. Badass softball team. We were blown up with us. I'll never forget, we were doing, in Japan, and we were playing Air Force, Marines, Navy, Army. I think different games. And we won all of them, right? And then the Marines are so upset. We were in Okinawa playing. They ran over the China Sea there. And the Marines are so upset they wanted another game. And they brought ringers in from Tokyo.
Oh.
We beat them worse. Oh, these happening actors. Yeah, well, we beat your butt, buddy. We respect you. We love you. You're protecting us against war, whatever else. But in softball, we beat your butt. That's all there is to it.
And I think, of course, what they're doing is really scary. But having dabbled in television, I know what it is to be really scared doing what you guys did best, too. And, let's make no mistakes, folks. It takes nerves of steel to be able to do what Anson and his friends did. And, of course, let's do it in front of a live audience, too. And I understood Ron was not all that on board with that. It was like...
Well, no, actually, all of us, every one of us except Ron had stage experience.
Right.
Ron had, movies, but he'd never done a stage show. And he had never done a live show. And that firm switched over to a three-camera live audience, which was a year and a half into the show. He was very, very nervous. And guess what? He blew it out of the park. He was a natural. And just did amazing. But, he was terrified. But he used it and hit a home run. So, yeah. And honestly, people don't realize a year and a half into the show, we were almost canceled because it was a one-camera show like a movie.
Right.
And that's when Gary Marshall decided to change it into a three-camera live audience show. Totally different. Whole different, you know, vibe for the show. Whole different energy. A whole different show. And that year was the year we went to number one and stayed there. It was a year and a half in. We were almost canceled. The next season, we became a phenomenon, number one in the world.
Yeah, and there was a phenomenon that I'd never experienced before, because a lot of shows had been filmed in front of a live audience.
Yeah.
But I'd never seen it so that every character, bar none, would make their first appearance, and the applause would be so intense and so long, and mixed with screams and all of the above. You guys, you broke character. I mean, Henry especially could not. I'm not supposed to be smiling right now, but this is amazing. You could just see it. And I thought, that must have just been so surreal to have that kind of love, that kind of reaction.
What's good about that, too? I mean, Gary, you know, really inspired humility. And he said something incredibly important. This is a good life lesson for everyone listening. He said, guys, you're in it. And in it means you love what you're doing. You're doing everything you can to be successful. You're on fire. And that's important. And he said, but never be of it. It's what you do. It's not who you are. He basically said, view the show and go home and wash dishes. You know, stick around it. You know, you're important because of who you are, not what you do. So don't hide behind it. What happens is when you're of it, you're hiding behind it, and it's more important than you. It's like hiding from you and your needs and what you need to improve with yourself and everything else. So you're in it, fantastic. Never be of it. That means you're hiding behind something, and that's not good for your life.
No. Well, what a shaman. I mean, geez. And look, Anson, you're like, when I said multi-talented, multifaceted, there's just so much. Most people know about your various ventures, all of them totally admirable. I mean, let's get right to it, though. I mean, I want to hear about Crazy Mama.
Oh, I'm so proud of this.
Hey, gang, just a quick reminder that you can also find a slideshow version of this podcast on my Golden Rage of TV YouTube channel. There, you'll also find all my other retro TV radio celebrity interviews and my Pods with Picks playlist. The Golden Rage of TV channel is jam-packed with various other nostalgic classic TV goodies. You'll find multiple seasons of my retro TV trivia series, which pays tribute to literally hundreds of classic TV shows and their stars. These include many trivia tidbits that you may just not have known. You'll also find my music playlist of rock guitar renditions of some of our favorite classic TV theme songs, all arranged and performed by yours truly. There's also a Happenings playlist, which houses all my celebrity memoir and merchandise reviews, as well as other promotions and current events. But much like this podcast, my Golden Rage of TV YouTube channel relies on the support of folks just like you. I'm talking about a simple one-click, no-obligation subscription. These really keep the wheels turning to continue bringing you more and more nostalgic retro TV entertainment. So please subscribe and help keep this effort charging ahead. Again, it's a simple, no-cost way to show your support for what I do. It would, of course, be greatly appreciated, and especially if you share it with a friend. Thank you in advance, folks, and now back to our show.
And when I started directing and writing years ago, I tried to do entertaining shows that also had social value, that really helped needs of everyday Americans, people around the world. And I did that. And then I got away from it for a while because you get hired to do shows. And basically, in those, they're hard to come by or hard to sell. But my current wife, Sharon Williams, was probably the number one female executive in advertising in the world at one time at Young & Rubicam. But she's a writer. And that went away years ago. But she wrote these short stories about her mother growing up with a mental breakdown, schizophrenic, and what she went through, what her family went through. And these stories were, they're funny, they're dramatic, they're emotional, they're uplifting. But it really did for mental illness, like Boys in the Band did for homosexuality, made it very tactile, very understandable. And I think can really move forward in terms of bringing recognition to it and getting help. So I suggested, I think this is a play. And she wrote Crazy Wilma, which is her experiences growing up in this situation. It's funny. It's funny. It's sad. It's emotional. At the end, it's winning. But we previewed it. We did meetings here in Ojai, and I mean, people crying, standing ovations. And I said, we have something here.
Yeah.
And I'm able to direct it. And Bethel Woods, which is the original Woodstock in upstate New York.
Yeah.
Years ago, they created in the huge entertainment center, 16,000 seat amphitheater where the Who's booked, the biggest groups in the world. They have other little theaters. It's a 60s museum. It's a big deal. They are looking into becoming the La Jolla Playhouse. And the La Jolla Playhouse is this theater company in La Jolla, California, where they develop and then they actually own pieces of Broadway shows that are developed there, including Tommy, Big River. It's a big deal. And they decided they're going to try that direction. They ran hundreds of plays. And guess which ones being premiered? April 12th in Bethel Woods. Crazy Mama is the first pick. And I'm honored to direct it.
Wow.
And Carolyn Hennessy, who you know from General Hospital.
Yes.
Also stage winning actress. It's a one-woman show, actually with a musician who has a small part. She's starring in it. And part of it, and it will be premiering April 12th. And people, I respect, you know, that have seen the stage readings. And it's true, they say, it's Pulitzer Prize material. It's one of some of the most brilliant writing I've ever read. And I've read a lot of scripts, man. It's brilliant. And audiences are moved. The first reading of this show, there was a standing ovation at intermission. Aside from a 5-minute standing ovation at curtain.
Wow.
That's without staging. That's just kind of minimal staging while you're reading a play. So this thing is powerful. It's going to be so effective in terms of spreading the word of mental illness and getting help and making it a tactile problem that everyone can like embrace. I mean, right now in the world, believe it or not in the world, in the United States, true, half of the high school and junior high students, half have some sort of mental problem.
Yeah.
Some sort of problem they need to go to. Some serious, not some serious, but it's a problem that needs to be corrected. And I'll tell you, a play like Crazy Mama is a huge asset for echoing out that problem and people embracing the problem and damn well fixing it.
Oh, that's amazing. You both really just deserve the best when it comes to this because of obviously artistic reasons, but as you just described, much deeper than that. And she just must be over the moon that it's gotten this kind of attention. By the way, Anson's wife is not only talented, he left this part out, maybe because I didn't read the book, I don't know, but she's also gorgeous. Sorry, Anson, I saw the wedding photos, so I had to throw that in there. But
yeah, am I lucky or not?
Yeah, I mean, I say you're both lucky. You're both lucky.
That's true. I'm more lucky, I think. But like I say, everyone goes through their ups and downs in life.
Yeah.
Making mistakes, you know? But I say it's never too late to get it right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sounds like you guys are getting it right. I mean, that's just so exciting.
Yeah, but I'm so proud of her. I mean, honestly, she's a brilliant, just brilliant writer that just wakes people up. And in the most entertaining way, but important too.
Yes.
It's more than a nice evening. You take it home with you.
Yeah.
And it stays with you. And it will improve people's lives. And that's great storytelling. So I just feel very fortunate just to be part of this, to be able to bring to the public something so important. It's so wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. All I've seen and read about it, it sounds fantastic. You know, and having that in my family, you know, my mom was institutionalized for a short period. Well, I was too young
to
really know about it. My grandmother had full-on schizophrenia, you know, the shock treatments, all that fun stuff that they thought was
good. Her mom had that too. Yes.
Which kind of explains me, you know.
I'm just talking to you, and you relate. You relate because it happened in your own family. You know how many multi-millions of people this has happened to?
Oh, yeah.
And there are ways to improve it. There are serious ways to improve it. And we're going to be part of helping get that done. That I am committing to that. And this show, Crazy Mama, is just the beginning. But it is powerful, it's entertaining, and it helps.
You know, spoken like a true politician.
Don't put me in that. Thank you very much.
I don't know if that ties in very well. in fact...
No, it doesn't. No, the politician doesn't work.
No, we may edit that. I don't know. We'll see, depending on how goofy I sound, because I'm always willing to lay myself down for the entertainment purposes. But, you know, speaking of politics, Anson, how's that a tie-in?
Oh, here we go. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you may have heard this, and I just read this in the news just a couple days ago. Senator Rand Paul... at a luncheon for other senators.
Yep. Saved someone's life. Yeah.
He used the Heimlich.
Yes, he did it. Yes, he did. And you know, I so don't agree with his politics, but a life was saved, which is priority. You know, and he did. He saved a life because of my uncle. Well,
isn't that something? Senator, a lot of folks don't know that.
And you do know. Most people don't. It's a good... You know, Happy Days was a major reason that the Heimlich maneuver became well known. You know that, right?
Yeah, sure, I
you
do.
Don't know that. No, you don't. You didn't read the book.
It's pretty clear.
So anyway,
I'm lying. Busted.
You know, actually, what happened? This is very interesting, and it's so funny. I was just talking with Phil this morning. Phil Heimlich, who is Dr. Heimlich's son, he's going to be running for Congress in Ohio, Cincinnati area. And we were just talking. But, we've been close for years. But anyway, Dr. Heimlich passed away, maybe 4 years ago, 96. But during the run of Happy Days, he was trying to get the Heimlich maneuver out there. And he had political problems with the Red Cross at the time. And the Red Cross refused to not only to promote it, but they demeaned and degraded it, saying it's baloney, you should slap on the back. So they were stopping the maneuver from really getting any credibility. He got a little bit here and there. And he was on the set one day, and we were just talking about it. And he was just really, really sad that so many people are dying that they didn't need to because of politics. And the phone rang on the set, and it was the Merv Griffin Show. And I had done the Merv Griffin Show a couple times before, and someone had dropped out for that evening show, and they asked if I could take their place. And I thought, wow, wouldn't that be great? Maybe we can get the Heimlich maneuver on the air. Totally naive, you know, like, sure. But
who can we get to choke on something?
No, not only that. I mean, like, they just don't put anything on the air. They vet it, they do this, they do that.
Yeah.
But I was naive. So I got done early that day. So we were able to go down to Merv Griffin Show, and I had to sing a song and then talk with Merv. So I get there, but I ask if I can talk with Merv earlier. And he was nice to me. I don't know him, though. You know, I've been on the show a couple of times. But he's not available. So then we rehearse the song. He's not available. Then the producer comes in to go over what I'm going to talk about. So, of course, I press a Heimlich maneuver, and he said, we can't do that. It's not deadlined. We're just going to talk about something fun on the set. So, basically, I thought, well, we gave it a shot. Not going to work out. They put Henry in the audience. Nice seat. And the show starts. I think I was second out or third out. I don't know. But I sing my song. And then there's a commercial delay while you go sit next to Merv. So I did an elevator pitch to Merv about the Heimlich maneuver. And he stopped and he looked at me and he said, I read something about that. It intrigued me. Yeah, I thank you for bringing that up. So the lights come on. And here we go, and I'm thinking I'm going to talk about Happy Days on the set. And Merv starts the conversation with pants and just told me something interesting. Is there a Dr. Heimlich in the audience? Yeah. Can you stand up, please? And he starts interviewing Dr. Heimlich from the audience about the Heimlich maneuver. Then has him come up to stage and does it on Merv. Okay. First national PR ever. To the Heimlich maneuver. Boom, light, boom, baby. But here's what people don't know. The director of that particular show, Merv Griffin's show, was a man by the name of Dick Carson, Johnny Carson's brother.
Huh.
He called Johnny saying, look, you got to get this Dr. Heimlich on the air. This is important. 3 weeks later, Dr. Heimlich's on Johnny Carson, doing it on Johnny Carson. And the Heimlich maneuver exploded around the world. If it wasn't for Gary Marshall creating Happy Days, if it wasn't for Henry Winkle being the number one shoulder, if it wasn't for this tremendous cast and everything, there would have been no shot for me to go on Merv Griffin and talk about anything. So Happy Days was a major reason the Heimlich maneuver is saving lives today. So Happy Days is not only a great entertaining show, generations are alive because of that show.
Isn't that something? You know, it's who could even put a number on how many lives it has saved? I mean, maybe you do have a number.
Yes.
But we're not tallying it. You know, it's like, I got to tell you.
You just saw one saved the other day in the Senate commissary.
Right. Exactly. I have to tell you, this is honest God truth. I used it once on a gal. I was in a rock band, and we were backstage, and she suddenly started choking on some sort of lozenge that she had in her mouth.
Uh-huh.
And it was blocked. And what I noticed then, and this is just to add to the whole point of this, folks, is you got to act. Don't freeze. Because what I saw, Hanson, was everybody freeze.
Yeah.
And I went, no, we can't. And this is my drummer's girlfriend, and I gave her the Heimlich, and it worked like a charm. And it took me a year to shake that girl. I mean, she fell madly in love with me.
Well, that's a good way to get a date, by the way. Here's the Heimlich maneuver. You're in.
Go look for somebody to just go find someone to save their life. You're in there.
That's it. All you have to do is save someone's life, you're down in your home.
It's true. It's exactly what happened, and I'll never forget that, you know? But
it's so great, though. But it's just, I like people to know just how important happiness was for that to happen.
It is. And I see, and once I read the book, it will be so ingrained in my mind just how important that whole subject is. Holy smokes. Oh, man.
I think I've been surprised about the book, too. It's not really a memoir at all. I really wrote the book honoring a person very important in my life that actually made me. And because I grew up lower middle class, had to work. You know, if you wanted something, you had to work.
Right.
I was an assistant janitor at London's department store. And my boss was Willie Turner, who's African-American, not well-educated, functional alcoholic, and profit. And he called his janitorial room the talk room. And there were a couple of oil drum cans in there, and you would sit and talk. And I had a tough upbringing, And he was one of the first adults that ever talked to me, not at me.
Yeah.
And he helped me find me. I wouldn't be here today without Willie Turner. So it's actually paying forward the lessons, the inspiration I got from Willie. And I wanted everyone to have a chance to sit on a drum can there in the cockpit and have the same conversation and maybe the same information and the same inspiration. And that's the book, Sing the Bulldog.
Wonderful. Now I'm even more motivated.
It's not how great I am. It's really Forrest Gump. I mean, things happen to me that are crazy. You know, I was kidnapped by the United States, by the President of the United States' daughter at the White House, kidnapped by her.
Was this after performing the Heimlich, or was this just for money?
No, this was like, you have to read it, but I literally was kidnapped out of an event, brought up to the residence, and I had to go, and I had to go, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. I literally was kidnapped to go see the show.
You know you've made it when you get kidnapped by the president's daughter.
Yeah.
You've arrived.
I'm there. I'm at Elvis Presley in the middle of a parking lot in Monroe, Louisiana. Forrest Gump stuff.
Yeah.
But every time, there was always, but it tied into a talk with Willie. All of it tied into something important, something bigger.
Yeah.
And I tried to incorporate that, where it would take you down to a very important lesson that Willie taught me that tied into these events. So I was really proud of the book.
Well, and it
didn't become a New York Times bestseller, but I'm really proud of them.
Well, again, folks, you got to get this book. And it's available on Amazon, I would assume. Is that where you generally point folks to get it?
I'm sure it's there somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Christmas is coming. And yes, it's on my list, Anson. It is.
And guess who gave it a rave? Like Dolly Parton gave it a rave.
Now that's a plus.
Ron Howard gave it a rave. Great testimonials.
Ron Howard. Oh, yeah. Richie. Got it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, Ron. Wrong with an E, you know, okay.
And then top heavy Dolly, yes, of course. How could you not know Dolly? Never stops. She's like you, Anson, just like a few of my friends that are celebrities.
Dolly Parton's like, she's the most amazing, kind lady. Are you kidding? She's up there with the greatest. What a talent, what a heart.
It's true. She's the real deal. And I mean, beauty backed with talent. Taylor Swift aside, she does that too. But Dolly.
Yeah, well, Taylor Swift, I think, learned from Dolly, you know?
Sure.
I've never been taught Taylor Swift, but I admire what she's doing. Her fame is like overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, but she's doing the right thing with it.
Yeah.
And Dolly Parton always has done the right thing. She's just, her life on earth may have been so much better for so many.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what counts.
Well, not unlike today's guest. I mean, Anson, you have a lot to be proud of, a lot to hang your hat on. And I mean, I was impressed even without reading the book. So just imagine, it will be almost as though you gave me the Heimlich and you won't be able to get rid of me because I will have fallen in love.
God, I'd be further in show business. Please don't.
Well, it would be a hetero kind of love, I promise you, but it would still be love.
Okay.
Oh, man. Well, this has just been an absolute joy, my friend. I've heard nothing but great things about you, and apparently, it's all true. Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, I heard things about you, too. That's great. What group were you?
Lies.
Which rock group were you in?
That was lies. Whatever you heard about me.
No, it was not. What rock group were you in?
I've been in a number. You, as guitar enthusiasts go, one of my big claim to fame was playing with Ronnie Montrose, a band called Montrose.
Oh, wow.
I played with him for 4 years, and he's just played on everything. He's just, Sammy Hagar came from him.
Wow.
Bad Motor Scooter, you know, Rock Candy, all that stuff. Got to perform that stuff for years. And so that was a feather in my cap. The next one just happened to be, as we were talking about Carolyn, as a part of a band that was on General Hospital, written into the show. It was called Eddie Main and the Idle Rich. And I was one of the Idle Rich. And Wally Kurth, it was his his alter ego. Anyway, great freaking singer. Started on Broadway and just, he's an actor, but he's really a singer who can act. And what they did was they wrote a storyline that included a rock band, and they asked him, you know anybody? Well, yeah, I have some friends that can play.
That's funny. And was Carolyn on at the time?
Yes, I believe she was. I probably met her, but she wasn't part of our storyline. I do know that, well, what happened is we ended up being, we were a real band. So we would actually perform to our own tracks on the show, and Wally would literally sing, then we would sing them live. So it was kind of live, but also all us. So four albums later, Christian Taylor and Wally Kurth, Kurth and Taylor was the name of the band away from the show.
Right.
Along with me, I'm not going to take writing credit, but I did perform on this as well as a solo. It won the Daytime Emmy Award for Best Original Song.
Wow.
And so what that did was it fueled up 10 straight years of playing for charities. Started with the Ryan White Foundation, and then it just morphed in. And then the next thing you know, we had our own foundation. It was all to help sick kids.
Nice.
I can tell you, Anson, it's like, no, I'm not living in a mansion. I don't have the platinum albums on my wall. But you know what? I went to those hospitals and gave them a check. And as hard as that was, believe me, not for the timid, it is so gratifying. It's my claim to fame is that I helped a lot of kids. We raised a lot of money, and that was it. So there you got my whole story.
That's everything. You did meat and potatoes.
I know.
The platinum bookings and all that, that's just icing.
And I know that's big on your list, too. I know, you know, through the Doors of Change and all of this.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible.
Can I talk about Doors of Change quickly?
You mean I got to keep you on the phone? Jeez, I wanted to go read the book. Okay.
God, man.
I'll make a little more
Doors
time.
Doors of Change. I got involved with Doors of Change. Thanks so much for the intro. Jeez. It's an organization in San Diego, and I'm involved too because I think this should echo off.
Yes,
to every city in the country. It's such a wonder. What they do is literally off the street, they get kids, 17, 18, 15, 14, 13, young people off the street, and they find security for them, food, housing, but more than anything, these kids, they've closed down. They don't trust anybody.
Yeah.
So it's very hard. It's very hard to make them whole again so they can progress in their lives. They're so damaged. And they do it through the arts. They found out by painting and music and all these kind of, all where you're able to express, the walls start coming down. And they've had such success with these kids. Just monumental success for these kids. One just got her law degree. Give me a lawyer. They're engineers. And they've done like probably 3,000 kids. And the results are phenomenal. And the commitment of this group and the results of what they do are just amazing. And that would help so many future generations, especially the young people going forward that kind of got a bad hand. Well, they're giving them a good hand, and they're able to go back in the world and progress and be all they can be. And so Doors of Change, you should look it up, doorsofchange.org. A very important group, but more than anything, it should be in every city, every major city in this country. There should be a Doors of Change. It will benefit so many young people that don't deserve to be on the street. They just for whatever reason got a bad hand. They deserve a helping hand. They deserve a platform to help them find themselves again and move themselves forward for a productive life. Not only for them, but for everybody else they meet. Because most of these kids, they reach out to people in need now because they know how important it is. So go to georgiachange.org. Very, very important organization. They have the big fundraiser next year. I was fortunate enough to do it this year, and I'm there for them. And because I'm there for them, because they give before they take. They do the job. They walk the walk. And the results of these young adults are proof that what they're doing is really so important and so productive.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm just taken with this whole conversation, folks. You're listening to Anson Williams, who you all know, of course, from that show. But in reality, it just sounds to me like, and maybe this was a past life thing that you brought into this one, but you're a hero, dude. That's what you are. You're heroic with the tasks, the messages, the way you help, the way you bring it all to people, bring them down to earth. I mean, hell, just talking to me. I don't know how many books you've sold. Maybe I'll buy two.
It doesn't matter. Well, I'm just I'm lucky. I'm able to be the front person for a lot of incredible people that are behind this. You know, the one I'm talking about, I'm able to move the message forward.
Yeah.
Like I said, but the light is really shining, not on me. It's shining on all these other wonderful human beings that committed years and years to the greater good, you know? And so I'm just, in fact, Henry, Donnie, myself, Mark, we just represent these people, these wonderful, wonderful people that have so much to offer. And if we have a platform to be able to shine the light on that, God bless, man. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. Star power used for the positive growth and all of, oh man, I couldn't say enough. You've shared so many wonderful things. It stayed with us a lot longer than you had initially set up for, and that's gracious right there. I can't thank you enough, Anson. It's just been wonderful talking to you.
Oh, really nice talking to you too. And I can just feel from you that you care and that you're one of us. You're doing the right thing for people, you know?
Yeah.
I think the one thing, they want to really help this country, and there's so much negativity in our Congress or whatever, you know, we need to become givers and not takers.
Yeah.
We really do. Our natural instinct is to give. Yeah.
Right.
It really is. We're just born that way. And that's being taken away from us.
Yeah.
We're being inspired to be takers, not givers.
Yeah.
Not right. Not the way to be, though.
No.
We have to change the character of that.
Well, and no gratification whatsoever. I mean, sure, you got it, but how did you get it? Who did you help along the way so that you can really hang your hat on it, like I was saying earlier? You just got so much of that, Mr. Williams. It's amazing. An amazing life you've had, and it's your amazing works that continue. And I want to see Crazy Mama in Lights, and I head out to New York, hit the Broadway shows. I want to see that.
Well, hopefully we'll get to off. It won't be a Broadway ever. It'll be off Broadway, you know, which is really good. But we're premiering at Bethel Woods, April 12th at Bethel Woods. And if anyone's near that area, whatever, it's well worth the drive. It's really going to be a monumental evening for people.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you, sir, and to your lovely wife, and good luck on all of that.
And thank you so much. Really appreciate it. God bless. Happy holidays to everybody. You know, happy holidays.
Absolutely.
And embrace the love. And during the holiday season, please give before you take.
Yeah.
Give, give, give.
There it is. There it is, folks. Well, happy holidays to you too, sir. And thanks again for joining me. I'm going to let you get on with your day.
Thank you so much. God bless everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Anson. There you have it, another Retro TV Radio podcast in the books. Be sure to check out doorsofchange.org, and you'll find the link to pick up Anson's book, Singing to a Bulldog, From Happy Days to Hollywood Director, and The Unlikely Mentor, Who Got Me There. Be sure to check out the production of Crazy Mama when it makes its debut in New York, and hopefully to an off-Broadway venue. I'm wishing you all a very happy holiday season and prosperous new year. This is your host, Pat McCormack, and thanks for listening to Retro TV Radio.